This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us today. Our ability to decode the human genome has come a long way in the last decade, and so has the availability of information about our genes. But just because you could learn what's in your genetic makeup, does that mean you should? And does it mean you should keep that knowledge to yourself or share it with your relatives or even the insurance industry? Dr. Robert Klitzman writes that in many ways, the science of genetics has outpaced the ethical and moral implications of that work. Klitzman is professor of psychiatry and director of the Masters of Bioethics program at Columbia University, and he's the author of the book, Am I My Genes? And he's with us in the studio. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Why is a genetic test any different from any other kind of medical test? You go to a doctor, he or she orders up some blood work, and you find that you have, say, diabetes. Why is it different than having your genome sequenced and finding out you have a particular mutation?
Genetic tests are different because, first of all, they say something permanent about you. I may have a lot of sodium in my blood today and tomorrow it won't be there, whereas if I have a gene that's associated with Alzheimer's or Huntington's disease or particular kinds of cancers, that will always be with me. And secondly, it is potentially discriminatory or the basis for discrimination. That is that though we have coverage against discrimination for health insurance, we don't have such protection for life insurance or disability insurance or long-term care insurance. And also, if I have a mutation, the odds are that someone else in my family has a mutation. So if I have a mutation for a particular cancer, the odds are that my parents may have it or my siblings or my children.
This is a test that is not just telling us something about ourselves. This is a test that is telling us something about who we come from.
Exactly right.
And where we might go.
Exactly right.
So as you say, when genetic testing first came along, there were a lot of cautions raised that this was information that could be useful medically but could also be used in a discriminatory way by, say, the insurance industry. Have those fears come to pass?
Well, it's a complicated issue. What I found in doing research, interviewing a lot of people at risk of genetic diseases, is that there is subtle discrimination that goes on. So, for instance, a woman at her workplace may tell a coworker, you know, I just found out I have that breast cancer mutation. And then everyone assumed, this woman said, that when her boss retired that she would be chosen to be the head of the division. And instead, she was passed over. Now, she doesn't know it's because of that, but her sense is that after she said this, people started to come up to her in the hall and say, how are you? And she thinks it was because of the fact that she had this mutation for breast cancer, that they wanted someone who they thought would be there longer, even though, of course, having the gene does not mean you'll get the disease. So there's that kind of subtle discrimination. She wasn't fired, but she wasn't promoted either. So these are concerns that go on. And the life insurance still has not decided what to do with the information. Right now, if life insurers decide to ask you when you apply, have you or anyone in your family had a genetic test? If so, what was the result? They can use that information to either deny you coverage or to increase your rates. And that's perfectly within their legal rights at the moment.
The book you wrote on this subject actually came out a couple of years ago. But I would imagine, if anything, the issues that inhabit this book are, if anything, even more prevalent today as genetic testing becomes more common.
Yes, that's exactly right. I tried to look a little bit toward the future at the kinds of issues that we may all be facing. Since the book has come out, the cost of sequencing your entire genome, that is your whole DNA, has gone down. 12 years ago, when the first person's DNA was sequenced, all their DNA, the price was several hundred million dollars. Today, it's less than $1,000, and the price will probably continue to go down. And more people are having their whole genome sequenced.
And I would imagine more and more people are having their whole genome sequenced without necessarily weighing these kinds of philosophical issues in their minds before they get the results.
Yes, exactly right. So people with cancer, for instance, are having their whole genome sequenced so the doctors can figure out what treatment will be best for each person based on their own genetics. This is part of so-called personalized medicine. But what that means is that people's whole genomes, the 3 billion chemical letters that make each of us, or molecular letters, will be on their record somewhere. And of course, with computerized medical records and electronic medical records, that information will follow us around and be with us for good or bad.
We all probably play with these questions, or many of us do play with these kinds of questions in our mind. If I could take a test to learn whether I'm predisposed to a disease or a condition, would I take the test? And what would I do with that information? What surprised you the most about what people told you?
Well, what surprised me the most, I think, is a number of things. One is that a lot of doctors say, well, if there's a test that's very predictive and there's something you can do about it medically, that you should get tested for. The other stuff, no, or we're not sure. But what I found is people who were at risk for Huntington's disease, for instance, which is a deadly disease that Woody Guthrie, the famous singer-songwriter, died of, among others, people said, well, even though there's nothing I can do about it, there's no treatment, I want to know, because if I know that I'm going to die a terrible death at the age of 40, I'm not going to save all my money up for a rainy day. And if kids, I'm going to move to Tahiti and be an artist, someone said, be a musician. So people make personal kinds of choices. Also, what surprised me is that people wonder about a lot of metaphysical issues involved. Why me? Why did I get this mutation and my sister didn't? Or why did my sister get it and I didn't? And people often have a hard time understanding these things. People would say, is it luck? Is it luck of the draw? People also misunderstood a lot of the genetics involved. So Huntington's disease, for instance, which I looked at in the book, if I have it, there's a 50% chance that each of my kids has it. But people would tell me, even some scientists, well, you know, when my sister told me that she didn't have it, I was devastated because, of course, that means that I have it. Or conversely, when my sister told me she had it, I felt terrible for her, but I felt relieved that I wouldn't. But of course, each flip of the coin is 50-50. So if I flip a coin and it's heads, the next flip doesn't mean it's going to be tails. It's either heads or tails. And so we don't think that way ordinarily. We didn't evolve thinking in terms of these statistics, and therefore they're hard to understand.
Well, and what role does education about how genetics work play in how patients make decisions about whether to get tested and whether to disclose those results?
Well, those are great questions. So education helps a great deal, and it helps people understand that just because you have a mutation doesn't mean you'll get the disease necessarily, depending on the disease. But it's still hard to understand these things and integrate them in one's life. What I found is that people have a story of their life, a narrative of their life, and they integrate genetic information into that in different ways. So for instance, one woman said to me, you know, when she found out she had the gene for breast cancer and had breast cancer, she said, you know, I always knew I shouldn't have stayed in that apartment all those years. Why is that? Well, that apartment, and I was going through a divorce at the time and it was terrible. And I think there was, you know, pollution in the apartment and various things. That's what gave me the disease. Another person said, well, I knew I shouldn't have stayed in that job all those years. Why is that? Well, that's when I found out I had breast cancer. I said, but you had the mutation. Yes, yes. But what triggered it was the stress of that terrible job. And so people have sort of an understanding of what goes on in their lives. And here's external genetic information. And doctors and some people think, well, you either have the genetic mutation or you don't. In fact, it's a much more complicated scenario that for many diseases, there is a mix of both nature and nurture. Some is genetic, some is environmental or other things. And integrating that into people's lives and making sense of it is often quite difficult.
We hear a lot of concerns in the legal world. I think it's called the CSI syndrome, where jurors expect a certain level of proof based on the kinds of evidence they see in TV shows. Is there something like that going on in genetics as well, that we expect more from the results of genetic testing than it might currently be able to offer us?
Well, genetics is complex, of course, and the problem is hard to generalize about because there are, in fact, some diseases for which there are definitive genetic tests. If you have the Huntington's mutation, you will get it if you don't die of something else first, and you will get it and die, unfortunately, at about the same age that your parent did. There are several other rare diseases for which there are definitive genetic tests. There's actually, it's thought, about a total of 56 genes that are highly predictive and are actionable. They're for very rare things. No more than 2 or 3% of the population at most has one of these diseases. Then there are diseases sort of in the gray area, breast cancer, for instance. If I have the gene for breast cancer, if I'm a woman, there's about a 50% chance that I'll get the disease. But among people with breast cancer, among women with breast cancer, only about 10% is the genetic kind. So 90% of the people who have breast cancer don't have the gene. So you can have the gene and not get it, 50-50, or you cannot have the gene and still get it. So these are much more complicated statistics. And then there are diseases such as Alzheimer's that having the gene may double your chances of getting the disease, but that may mean going from a 10% to a 20% chance of getting the disease depending on your age. So for some things, it's very definitive and predictive. For other things, not. It turns out that for more behavioral things such as intelligence or impulsivity, there's much, much more of a mix of some genetic, some environment, et cetera.
You also write about an interesting – and this is probably in the realm of metaphysics – a question that if you test positive for a mutation, what does that mean for your identity? Do people see themselves as sick or something else? And maybe what difference does it make?
Well, that was one of the things that surprised me in the book. The book's title is Am I My Genes? And people wrestled with that question. To what degree is this a defining element of me? Certainly with Huntington's disease, which has psychiatric symptoms, people become psychotic, they become depressed, and they can't control that. There's a lot of implications that is this my genes affecting me in some way? And of course, this relates to much longer, long-standing debates in our culture that go back centuries of nature versus nurture, how much free will versus determinism we have, et cetera. So people wrestled with this. I found that a number of people who had had prior trauma in their lives, who had been depressed or one woman had been abused as a child, people like that often said things like, you know, I always felt there was something wrong with me, that I'm a mutant, that I'm a freak of nature, and I always knew something was wrong with me. So people have a hard time trying to make sense of this, often because it is something despite them. One woman said, you know, I got breast cancer and I found out I had the mutation. It was hard to me because I was such a big environmentalist. I was always blaming everything on pollution and on companies that are polluting our environment. And then to find out that actually my breast cancer is due to a gene in part is hard for me to make sense of. And I find that people draw a line in the sand. People need to blame one thing or another. It's very hard to say, well, it's partly this and partly that and partly something else. People emotionally like to say, you know, it's the environment or it's something else or it's my apartment or that bad husband or that bad relationship or that bad job.
Are we looking at a necessary clash here between science, which looks for answers, and philosophy, which looks for questions maybe?
Well, it's a great question. I think that genetics highlights the way in which we need not just science and not just philosophy and humanities and social science, but all of these together. Universities are split up. There are science departments on the one hand and philosophy departments somewhere else. And yet a problem like genetics goes to the core really of who we are as people. What does it mean to be human? How much free will do I have? How am I connected to my parents, et cetera, et cetera? These are broad questions that rely and need not just understanding from science, but understanding from the humanities as well.
Well, and presumably, I have not been to medical school, but I imagine there are not many courses on fate that are taught.
Yes, exactly right. It's very funny. People, when I started doing these interviews, started to talk about luck. It's luck that I got the gene. It's luck that I didn't get the gene. So I looked up the word luck in the medical literature on Medline, and when I typed in the word luck, I got hundreds of hits. Articles which mentioned luck in the title or somewhere, but none of them define luck. So I think this suggests the way in which when faced with uncertainty in medicine, we like to be scientific, but there's a lot of what commonly is called luck involved. And none of these articles really looked at what that is and how we understand it and why it is the case that it is. It turns out that there are other literatures in social science and humanities that do look at luck or look at blame or fate. So anthropologists, for instance, often look at luck is how we understand things we can't explain in the universe. Philosophers often look at luck, meaning that it's not my responsibility. If I'm just lucky or unlucky, it means that it wasn't my action. So there are these other ways of looking at it outside. But in fact, all these are brought in, I feel, in the case of medicine and luck.
So what do you see as the way forward in this area? Who ought to be taking the lead in maybe changing the paradigm for how we approach these kinds of issues?
Well, I think ultimately we all do, because I would predict that in a few years, maybe 10 years, that when you go to the doctor's office, your doctor will say, we are going to do genetic testing. We may do genetic testing because you have disease X. And there are mutations or genetic markers that we can look for that will help us decide what treatment is best for you. So if we both have a certain disease, diabetes or cancer or depression or something else, they may say, well, for you, this, based on your genetics, this drug is going to be the most effective and have the least side effects. And for me, based on my genetics, it'll be a different drug. And so there'll be genetic testing. And because the price has come down for whole genome testing, once you start to say, let's look for one or two or few genes, it's the same price to look at all the genes. And so in a few years in the future, it wouldn't surprise me if when you go to the doctors, he or she will look at this laptop in front of him and say, do you want to know if you have the gene associated with Alzheimer's? I can press this button. Do you want to know if you're a carrier for genes associated with autism in case you want to have a child? I can press that button. Now, granted, these are a little bit in the future, but I would argue they're not that far in the future, and that 20 years, 10 years. I mean, the other issue, of course, is that science has advanced much more quickly than anyone would have predicted over the recent years. On the other hand, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of the fact that we used to think that there would be one gene for every disease. There would be a cancer gene, a depression gene, a intelligence gene. Of course, there are many genes involved in all of these.
Well, and it seems like when the time comes, we would be well served to have weighed a lot of these issues before we walk into our doctor's office and had him or her ask us whether we want him to push that button.
Yes, exactly right. And of course, the problem is that a lot of doctors went to med school a number of years ago before these were options, and they may not fully understand the issues, and they may not know how much patients individually differ in what they want. Some people may say, you know, I've lived a long life. I'm 85. I don't need to know any of this stuff. Someone else may say, well, I'm thinking of having kids. I want to know everything possible that you can tell me. Someone else may say, well, you know, I'm depressed or I have cancer or something else, and I have enough on my plate even though I'm only 40. I don't really need to focus on other things. Thank you very much. My plate's full. Some people may say, I'm a science geek. I love science. Tell me everything. So people may vary in their desires for various reasons. So there's not a one-size-fits-all model, and we need to train doctors to deal with that. At the same time, of course, doctors have a lot of competing pressures on them, so we need to have enough genetic counselors. Unfortunately, genetic counseling is generally not covered in most cases by insurance companies, and so we need to factor that in, and we need hopefully to have policies that will change that.
Makes it seem like the days of deciding whether to find out whether you're having a boy or a girl makes those days seem kind of quaint.
Yes, right. Well, we're soon going to find out a lot more than that, yes.
Well, Dr. Robert Klitzman, thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Dr. Robert Klitzman is professor of psychiatry and director of the Masters of Bioethics program at Columbia University and author of the book, Am I My Genes? Confronting Fate and Family Secrets in the Age of Genetic Testing. He was in town yesterday to speak to audiences at the Milwaukee Academy of Medicine and the Medical College of Wisconsin. A quick break now, and then how a project engaging seniors in Milwaukee culminates in a performance piece this weekend. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.